Well, I just tell you, Bum said, sitting down and pouring a cup of coffee. It come to me whilst I was talking with Red Hand. Seedy, didn't you tell me you'd been to Fort Vancouver recent? Only about 6 months ago. And the brand new building for the missionary church was not in the fort. Oh, no, it's a good 3-4 miles from there. They built it a purpose there so the engines would feel better about coming into it. Bum sipped his coffee and chuckled. Busting our butts for nothing, that's what we've been doing. What you mean? Leo asked, scooting closer to Bum. Them folks in the wagon train don't know us. How could they? They ain't never seen us. Don't nobody at the fort know us. It stands to reason that them women missionaries and the gold is going to be at the church. Seedy said the living quarters was in the rear of the building. It's 3-4 miles from the fort. All alone, ain't it, Seedy? You bet. Preacher and them sorry friends of his'n is sure to be hell-firing back toward us to finish this fight, Bum said with a grin. All we got to do is be a little careful and just head straight west from here and then cut south. You boys see what I'm getting at? Kind of, Jack Harris said. But ain't that sort of risky, if we're thinking along the same lines, that is? Not really. We can go in and grab the gold and the women and be gone hours before anybody discovers the bodies. Far as that goes, we can kill some damn Injuns and chuck their bodies in there and burn the place down. Who'd know the difference? I like that, Beckman said. We can grab us a couple of young squaws, hump 'em till we're ready to go, and then kill 'em. Good idea, Bum said. There's lots of fall berries now, and the squaws will be out picking 'em to make pemmican. Should be easy to grab a couple young ones, but we're going to have to be real quiet about it. And when the deed is done, we're going to have to move fast and far. And we're going to have to be careful about which tribe the squaws belong to. Amen to that, Slug said. I damn sure don't want no digger woman. That wasn't what I meant, Bum admonished him. Oh, Slug said. When do we ride? Waller asked. Let's give Red Hand and his boys a couple of hours to get clear away. We can be breaking camp and packing up now, just in case that damn renegade left someone behind to snoop and spy on us. What did you mean? Slug asked. Oh, forget it, Slug, Bum said. Which would you rather have on your trail, Slug? Jack asked. A peaceful Injun or a Blackfoot? Oh, Slug said, right. Preacher rode slowly back to the wagon train. He had not told any of them that on that day they would be done with the mountains and looking out over the huge valley that lay south of the Columbia. They had reached the promised land. Despite the fact that most of the movers considered him to be a sarcastic, heartless, and sour man, Preacher was none of those things. He was proud of this bunch of pilgrims. They had done what no one, to the best of his knowledge, had ever done. And he knew that all of them, with the exception of Wade and his two-bit kit Avery, would be bigger and better people for the trip. Preacher knew, too, that not all of them would survive out here. Injuns would get a few, the fever would take a few more. Accidents and other mishaps would claim still a few more. But those that would live could be proud of what they'd done. And speaking of Avery and his pa, the father had gotten all up in Preacher's face just the day before, after Preacher had raised his voice and fussed at the young man for being a laggard, which he certainly was. Lazy, no-count pup. The father said when they crossed the mountains, he was going to put a butt-whipping on Preacher that the mountain man would never forget. So Preacher knew that he was going to have to stomp on Wade, so. Preacher was looking forward to it. He'd had a belly full of the man. No dancing this time around. Preacher rode through the timber, figuring the movers had about 500 more yards to go before they broke free and could stand on the plateau that overlooked the valley. He carefully tucked his smile away. Beartooth winked at him when he rode back to the train. Gonna tell him? Not just yet. He looked up at the sky. Not even noon yet. He looked at a man leaning on his axe and looking at him. Preacher was not well liked, and he was well aware of that fact. It bothered him not a whit. You figure on that tree maybe falling down all on its own, Brewer? He asked cheerfully. The mover gave him a dirty look and went back to chopping. Preacher rode up to Melody. Come on, he told her. I want to show you something. Richard, you and Edmund and Penelope come along. Preacher stopped them just before Timber's Edge. This is it? Penelope asked, looking around her. This is the same thing we've been seeing for weeks. Y'all ride out there on the flat and take a good look. Go on. Now wait here. Preacher stepped out of the saddle, eased the cinch on Hammer, and squatted down, chewing on a blade of grass. Yee-haw! He heard Richard shout. Wahoo! Edmund momentarily forgot his churchly bearing. A mover rode up, his long rifle at the ready. My God, is it the Red Savages? Nope, Preacher said, standing up. You home, Pilgrim. 2. The pioneers, many of them ragged and gaunt, stood on the plateau and gazed in disbelief at the lush and green valley that lay before their eyes. Many of them wept. Still others dropped to their knees and prayed, giving thanks to God for getting them safely through the wilderness. Only a few of them included the mountain men in those prayers. At first. Then, as they realized they never would have made it without the help of Preacher and his friends, they all formed a huge circle and linked hands, offering quiet prayers for Preacher, Dupree, Nighthawk, Trapper Jim, and Beartooth. We ought to be fairly blessed, I reckon, Beartooth said to his friends, standing away from the circle of pioneers. That's good, Jim said, for I expect that we're going to need all the help we can get when Gabriel sounds the call. Swift decided at that moment it was a good time to rally the movers and get them down from the plateau. He gave a mighty blast on his bugle and liked to have scared the mountain men out of their britches. That does it, Dupree said, when he had settled his badly jangled nerves. Am I gonna snatch that bugle away from him and stomp it so flat not even an angel could toot it? Laughing, Preacher calmed his friend and turned to Jim. Jim, ride yonder to the river and get one of them engines that's always hanging around to canoe you across and tell the chief factor we got a whole passel of pilgrims waiting on this side. You might as well spend the night and ride back in the morning. See you boys then, Jim said with a grin. I'll be thinking about you in a belly up to the bar. Don't you drink up all the whiskey now, you hear me? Dupree warned him. Jim waved and rode off toward the river. Are we reasonably safe from Indian attack here? A mover asked Preacher. No. The reply was flat and fast given. But you are safer here than at any other time behind you. If some of you are thinking about staying on this side of the river and farming, best thing you can do is build your cabins close together for protection. We are thinking that, Preacher. It's so beautiful. He stuck out his hand and Preacher shook it. Thank you, sir. He looked at the others. Thank you all. I reckon, Dupree said after the man had left him, that we could take a few days' time to see that these pilgrims know how to notch logs and the like. That would be the Christian thing to do, all right, Beartooth said. I think you're all plumb loco, Preacher said. Nighthawk looked at him. That night, the skies opened up and it started raining. Never fails out here, Preacher said. Wettest damn place I ever been in all my entire life. I'd sooner build me a cabin under a waterfall. I long for the Rockies, Dupree said. You figure on wintering where, Preacher? I ain't given no thought. Damn sure ain't gonna be near here, I can tell you true on that. You might ought to wrap your robe around that blonde-haired filly and snuggle up close to her when the snow flies, Beartooth suggested. She'd keep a man warm, I'm thinking. Best thing for you to do is close that fly-trap of yourn, Preacher told him. I be's hungry round my mouth, Beartooth wisely took the suggestion to heart. Like to have me a bear steak right about now, just a fairly dripping with fat. Dream on, Dupree said. That mover's woman over yonder said she was a cooking up mush and we's welcome to eat with them. I hate mush. It ain't bad if she'll let it harden some and then fry it in fat. Get it crispy and it's right tasty, Preacher said. My mama used to fix it that way for breakfast, but I ain't no friend of gruel. He took a sip of coffee. Was you boys serious about staying around for a time and lending a hand so these poor helpless children can get set up for winter? Why not? Dupree said. You got anywheres else you gotta be in a hurry? Can't say as I have. Then it's settled, Nighthawk said. Oh, all right. Preacher had to grouse about it a little. If I didn't, I'd never hear the last of it. Y'all'd rag me about it forever. Personal, I think y'all got you eyes on some mover's woman. That's what I think. Come the spring, y'all probably still be here, scratching in the ground and planting taters and the like. They were still bitching, telling the most outrageous of lies and insulting one another when the last lantern in the wagon train was turned down. Melody and Penelope and Richard and Edmund arranged for passage across the Columbia, and Preacher was out hunting when they left. Deliberately gone. About half the wagon train elected to cross the river to settle on the north side, the remainder choosing to remain on the south side. Despite his grumblings and sour attitude, which by now everybody knew was all an act and not the real Preacher, the mountain man really liked the pilgrims, and in a way felt responsible for them. It was a strange feeling for the normal solitary man. So the time went by quickly in the building of corrals and stables, stockades, and the homes that would stand inside them. One day Preacher looked up and found that he and the others had been in the valley almost 3 weeks. Time do fly when a body's a-having fun, don't it, Preacher? Dupree said with a grin. Preacher nodded, his eyes on Beartooth, who was returning from the fort, and pushing his mount hard. Dupree followed Preacher's eyes and said, Something's wrong, Preach. I gleaned that right off. Where's Jim and Hawk? Out hunting supper? It better not be fish. I'm getting mighty tired of fish. I didn't say they was spearing it. I said they was hunting it. Must be time for us to leave. You getting crotchety and hard of hearing, too. I ain't neither. Is too. Beartooth swung down. Old John Billingley was at the fort provisioning up for the winter. He just come in from the east. Says Red Hand and his bunch was riding hard back to their own territory, but without Bum Kelly and his bunch. And they was two raggedy-looking hard cases just a-hanging around the fort. They pulled out quick when they spied me eyeballing 'em. Have some coffee and tell us the rest of it, Preacher told him. How'd you know they's more? 'Cause you wouldn't have been forcing that poor animal of yourn to tote you so fast if there weren't. I swear if you get any fatter, we're gonna have to buy an elephant from some circus for you to ride. You're an unkind man, Preacher, Beartooth said, pouring a cup full of brew that looked strong enough to melt a horseshoe. And probably was. What I am is truthful. What else is they? That church that your sweetie is living at is located a good 4 mile from the fort. Plum isolated it is, Chief Factor told me it was done deliberate so the engines would come to it better. And Richard told me they would keep the gold at the church headquarters, Preacher said. Do they have any fighting men out at the church? Nope. Couple of tame old Chinooks is all. They sweep and dust and the like, the Factor said. I don't like it, Dupree said. I don't like it at all. Neither do I, Preacher agreed. I think what we'll do is this. It was an emotional farewell from those settlers who had stayed south of the river. The women and the kids squalled, and the men stood brave and fought back tears. Preacher cut it short, waved farewell, and the mountain men turned their horses and rode away. The settlers watched them until they were out of sight, and then with a sigh, turned and once more began preparing their cabins for the winter that was not far off. Preacher and his friends rode east for a day, camped, and then come the morning, headed north, just in case Bum had men watching them. You know where there's a good crossing on the Columbia, Hawk? Preacher asked. No, but I know where we can cross, if the water's low and we're lucky. Days later, they were still looking for Bum and his gang. The chief factor at the fort had been warned by Dupree about the large amount of gold carried by the missionaries and the danger of an attack on the church by the Kelly gang. The factor had listened and then informed the Frenchman that while he would do what he could to ensure the safety of the missionaries, those who choose to settle far away from the fort were really not his concern. His words sounded a lot colder than they really were. The factor just didn't have the manpower to look after everybody. No one had asked the missionaries to come out. They did that on their own. His primary concern was to protect the goods of the company who employed him. The mountain men ran into a hunting party of friendly cayuses and stopped to palaver with them. Southwest of the Lewis, the leader told them, just on the edge of the big timber, many whites are camped. They are not friendly, and we did not attempt to camp near them. They are not trappers. I don't know what they are. I think perhaps they are thieves. I do not trust them. Preacher thanked him, and they rode on. Five open hands of men, Nighthawk said. That's a goodly number, but somewhat less than we faced a month ago. A lot of his followers have left him, Preacher said. Maybe we'll get lucky and put an end to Bum Kelly. Beartooth wasn't so sure about that. That no-count's been around a long time, Preach. A lot of men has tried to put him in the ground. I'd settle for Jack Harris, Dupree said. He's been giving trappers and guides and the like a bad name for years. I'm greedy, Preacher replied. I want them all. Nighthawk touched the white ashes and smiled. We're no more than half a day behind them. 25 to 30 men, Preacher said, after walking around and carefully inspecting the campgrounds. And a nasty bunch they is, too. No bloody bandages laying around, Dupree said. Looks like they're all in pretty good shape. They're heading for the fort, Jim told them. That side's as clear as leaves on a tree. I know a shorter way, Beartooth said. We can be there a couple hours for them. Preacher swung into the saddle. Let's ride.
He didn't even say goodbye, Melody said, gazing out a window of the mission.
The afternoon was clear and bright and cool, with not a single cloud in the sky. A welcome relief from the rain that usually fell. Frost had colored the land that morning, laying a heavy mantle of white that was gone as soon as the sun touched it. Winter was not far away.
Oh, Melody, Penelope said, why can't you see that he's entirely the wrong man for you? Yes, he's handsome and dashing and daring and all of that, but he's wild, Melody. He's like the wind. He doesn't belong in a house. He'd feel confined, like a chained animal. It wouldn't be fair to ask him to change his ways. He belongs to the mountains. and the wild high country. Melody turned from the window. She smiled sadly. I know all that, Penelope. Suddenly, she giggled. Can you just imagine the looks on Mum's face if I should suddenly show up back east with Preacher in tow? The two young women burst out laughing at just the thought. Or better yet, Penelope said, with all five of them. Richard and Edmund walked into the sitting room, curious to see what all the giggling was about. What in the world? Edmund inquired. Girl talk, Melody told the young men. You wouldn't understand. Richard walked to the window that Melody had just left and stared out, silent for a moment. He turned to face the group. It's odd that Preacher didn't stop to say goodbye. Swift told me they left very abruptly. What are you saying? Penelope asked, walking across the room to stand by his side. I'm not sure. But I became friends with Preacher toward the last. And I am sure that something is not right about their leaving. I just have a feeling that their sudden departure might be a ruse of some sort. A deception? Edmund asked. No, I don't believe that. What would be the reason? Richard spread his hands. I don't know. It's just a feeling I have. I'm probably wrong. I'm sure you are, Edmund said smugly. We shall never see those men again. That outlaw and the gold we have hidden here at the church, Melody said. What about it? Edmund asked. Preacher may have received word that the gang had not given up and were coming this way. He and his friends may have gone to attack them, or head them off or something like that. Pure romantic balderdash, Edmund said with a laugh. Melody, you became mildly infatuated with the man and had a mental fling. Put him out of your mind and settle both feet back on the ground. You'll not see that will-o'-wisp again. With a knowing and not a terribly kind laugh, he left the room. Richard stared hard at Edmund's back. Sometimes, the missionary said, I believe that man is not far from being a fool. 3. They're about a mile ahead of us, Nighthawk said, slipping back into camp after making his silent reconnoiter on foot. 28 of them. No guards out. No doubt in your mind it's Bum? Jim asked. No doubt, Nighthawk said, pouring a cup of coffee from the pot set on the rocks beside a hat-sized fire. There's gotta be some of them no counts out permanently for the dawnin', Preacher said, a grim tone to the words. His gaze touched the eyes of his friends. Anybody don't want to do it this way, say so now. The four other mountain men looked at him, their eyes hard. Dupree finally said, I ain't got no use for murdering child-raping scum. Let's do it. The others nodded their heads in agreement, then set about gathering up their gear. They were grim-faced as they worked, for this was to be a bloody night. There were only small pockets of law west of the Missouri River, and not a hell of a lot more law than that between the Missouri and the Mississippi. These mountain men ran wild and free, and they answered to few codes of conduct. But those they did subscribe to were the basic ones that decent men everywhere held to. Steal a man's horse in the wilderness and you set him afoot to face possible death. So stealing a man's horse called for a hanging or shooting on the spot. You did not lie except in jest, for here a man's word was held as tight a bond as a contract done up in some fancy law office. A man did not bother a good woman or child, or even a bad woman in most cases. Harm a woman, and the penalty was almost certainly death. Rape a woman or child, and the penalty was certain death. often in very unpleasant ways. The mountain men led a wild and rough existence, and the justice they dealt was just as wild and rough and unforgiving as the land which they lived in and fought in and, for most, eventually died in. On this night, the five mountain men shoved pistols behind their sashes, added war axes to that, and picked up their Hawken rifles. They began making their silent way toward the outlaw camp of Bum Kelly. They took their time, wanting to arrive just when most of the outlaws would be getting ready to roll up in their stinking blankets. With any kind of luck this night, the outlaws would sleep forever, and the missionaries, and no telling how many countless others, blissfully unaware of the danger the outlaws presented, would live normal, happy lives, or as normal and happy as could be in the wilderness, with any kind of luck. The ambuscaders neared the camp, broke up, and silently moved forward, stopping their stealthy advance just at the edge of the clearing. The fires were dying down, and men were grumbling about the cold as they prepared to roll up in their blankets. Preacher spotted several thugs that he recognized and assumed that Bum was already in his blankets. He lifted his Hawken and blew one standing man straight to hell and into the hot embrace of Satan. The others opened fire a split second later. The night roared with gunfire, and the air became choking with gun smoke from the muzzle loaders. "Now!" Preacher screamed and charged the camp, a knife in one hand and a war axe in the other. Moses reared up from the ground, his dirty face pale and his eyes wide in fear. Preacher smashed his skull with the axe and jumped over the dead man. Beartooth, using both axe and knife, ended the life of Jennings, while Nighthawk finished Halsey with an axe. Jim ended Bobby's vicious life of crime, as Dupree buried his war axe into the head of Keys. Preacher threw his axe with deadly accuracy, the head burying deep in Beckman's skull and bringing the outlaw down dead. He fell into the fire. Preacher worked his axe free and let the men burn. They needed a little more light to work by anyway. Slug made the terrible mistake of trying to best Beartooth strength to strength. The huge mountain man broke the outlaw's neck and let him fall bonelessly to the cold ground. "Damn your eyes!" George screamed at Preacher as he jumped for the man. Preacher buried his knife in the man's stomach and ripped upward. He jerked his blade free and stood over the body. The camp fell silent. The mountain men looked around as they stood in the middle of the carnage. There appeared to be no one left alive. Bum, Jack Harris, Leo, and Bull had jumped for their horses when the first shot was fired. They rode bareback, holding on to the mane, the horses just as wall-eyed and trembling with fear as the men on their backs. Dipper, Waller, and Burke had run wild-eyed into the night. They left their horses and all their possessions behind in their frantic dash to get clear of the bloody ambush. No matter. They could always kill again and steal more horses. They headed for Fort Vancouver. "Bum ain't here," Dupree said. "Neither is that damnable turncoat Jack Harris," Preacher said. "I count 21, Nighthawk said. 7 got away. I will see very quickly in what direction." Preacher did some fancy cussing as he stood in the clearing of death. "We'll track them, old hoss," Dupree assured his friend. "We'll get them." "Bet on it," Preacher said in a low, menacing tone. Beartooth dragged Beckman out of the flames and tossed some water on him, putting out the burning clothing. "He smelled bad enough alive," the mountain man said. 3 on foot, heading for the fort," Nighthawk said. 4 mounted men headed straight east." "I'll take care of them on foot," Preacher said, reloading his weapons. "Let's get back to camp and saddle up. You boys track Bum, and you can bet it's Bum and Jack on horseback, and I'll catch up with you along the way. Hawk, leave rocks piled for me, will you?" Nighthawk nodded and the men took off at a trot for their camp. An hour later, they were hard on the trail of those who had survived the ambush.
"We got no food, no saddles, and we left most of our weapons back at the camp,"
Bum griped.
"I never been in no spot like this before."
They had stopped to get a drink of water at a little creek and to rest their horses.
"I wonder how many got away," Leo questioned. "I seen a half a dozen shot to bloody rags in their blankets."
"I never figured Preacher would pull something like this," Bum said.
"If it was Preacher and them."
"It was," Jack Harris said sourly. "And Preacher will do anything. He don't play by no rules. I tried to warn y'all about Preacher. That's the most meanest man that ever walked these mountains."
"I think I seen Dipper and Burke get free," Leo said. "Maybe one more.
I don't know for sure. It all happened so damn fast, all I could think of was getting free and safe."
He looked at his hands in the faint moonlight. They were trembling. He wasn't sure his legs would support his weight if he tried to stand up.
"I'm just wondering if and for how long Preacher and them others will track us," Bum said.
"They'll track us," Jack replied bitterly. "And they'll track us till hell freezes over."
Preacher rode directly for the fort, taking trails those on foot would avoid. The three outlaws had to head for the fort. They had nowhere else to go. Once there, he told no one what had happened. The factor might frown on folks ambushing other folks. His presence was reported to Richard, who told none of the others the news. He immediately saddled up and rode in to see the mountain man. Preacher was camped outside the walls.
"Melody was rather upset when you left without saying goodbye, Preacher," he told him.
"She'll get over it."
"Oh my," Richard said.
"Oh my what?"
"Here comes that Wade fellow."
Preacher looked up and grunted.
"He best keep on going. I ain't got the patience right now to mess with that fool."
"You there," Wade called, his good-for-nothing son with him.
"You, mountain man, I came to call you out."
"You best go on, Wade, and leave me alone. Mess with me now and I'm gonna wind your clock." Without another word, Wade hit him, the blow unexpected. Preacher hit the ground, flat on his back.
"Fight! Fight!"
someone from the fort yelled.
Preacher slowly got to his moccasins and spat out blood from a busted lip.
"All right, mover," he said, low menace in his voice. "You got this coming to you."
He faked the blow. Wade flicked a hand to deflect it, and Preacher tossed a hard right fist to Wade's mouth. The blow snapped his head back and brought blood to his mouth. Preacher busted him with a hard left fist that landed on the side of the man's jaw, and Preacher followed that with a right to Wade's gut. Wade backed up, shaking his head and trying to catch his wind. Preacher pressed him, landing blows to the man's shoulders and face and stomach. Preacher backheeled the man and sent him stumbling to the ground. Avery screamed curses at Preacher and jumped at him, both fists flailing the air. Preacher timed a punch perfectly, and it landed smack on his nose, flattening it and sending blood squirting. Avery squalled and sat down on the ground.
"God damn you," Wade yelled, getting to his boots. "That's my son you struck."
"And a piss-poor kid he is, too," Preacher told him. "He must take after his pa."
Wade swung and Preacher turned, the blow catching him on the shoulder. The blow hurt, for Wade was a big and powerful man, a bully, like father, like son. Preacher popped a fast left that smacked Wade on the mouth, bringing new blood to the man's lips.
"Ain't it ow, pa?"
Avery blubbered, both hands covering his busted and bloody beak.
"What'd you say?" Wade cut his eyes to his son. "He wants you to clean my plow, Wade,"
Preacher interpreted.
"But I allow as to how I got something to say about that."
Preacher jumped up into the air and kicked Wade in the face,
the kick knocking the man back to the earth. He landed heavily on his butt, and his teeth clicked together from the sudden impact with the ground. "Are you going to rest or fight?" Preacher taunted the man. Wade slowly got to his feet. His face was bloody and swelling, and he was mad clear through. So far, he had not been able to land an effective blow on the mountain man. Preacher cut his eyes. The smart aleck kid was crawling behind him so his paw could shove him tumbling. Preacher sidestepped and gave Avery the toe of his moccasin right in the gut. The young man howled in pain and fell sprawled out on the ground, gasping for breath. Wade came at Preacher like a wild bull, his face filled with hate and his mouth spewing out cuss words, all of them directed at Preacher and his ancestors. None of it was in the least complimentary. Preacher stuck out a foot and tripped the man, sending him to the ground, face first. Wade kissed the grass and came up sputtering and spitting out dirt. Preacher stepped in close and hit the bigger man twice, a left and a right to the jaw. Wade staggered back, regaining his footing just at the last moment. He lifted his fists. "Aw, give it up, man," Preacher said. "You're done." Wade lumbered forward and took a wild swing at Preacher. Preacher sighed and popped him again, a left and a right, to belly and jaw. Still, the big man would not go down. "Come on, mountain man," Wade sneered. "Fight. I got you whipped now." "You about a fool, Wade," Preacher told the man. "This fight is stupid. Give it up and I'll buy you a drink."
"Hick his ass, Pa,"
Avery screamed, mushmouth getting to his big feet. "I about had enough of you too, boy," Preacher told the young man. Avery told the preacher where to go and what to stick up a certain part of his anatomy when he got there. Preacher narrowed his eyes and gave the young man the back of his hand right across the mouth. The force of the blow knocked Avery to the ground. When Preacher turned around to face Wade, the big man was standing, grinning a bloody smirk at Preacher, with a knife in his hand. 4. "I really don't think you know what you're doing, Wade," Preacher told him, his voice cold and low. "But if you don't put that knife up, I'm gonna kill you, man. And I ain't gonna tell you that but one time." The chief factor stepped through the crowd, a cocked pistol in one hand.
"Withdraw, sir," he ordered Wade, "or stand and die."
With a snarl, Wade sheathed his blade and stood staring at Preacher. Wade's chest heaved and blood dripped from his busted nose and mouth. "There will be another day, Preacher," he warned, "and you may wager on that." "Why?" Preacher asked him. "Are you that anxious to die, Wade?" With a snort of derision, Wade shoved and elbowed his way through the crowd. He helped the light of his life to his feet, and together they walked off. "Preacher did not start this trouble," Richard informed the chief factor. "We were standing here chatting when Wade bulled his way up to us and demanded that Preacher fight him. The man is a troublemaker, sir." "Yes," the man said, uncocking and securing his pistol. "Unfortunately, I know that only too well. The family has been in this area just about a month, and already that Wade fellow has been involved in 3 altercations. That son of his is no more than a common hooligan and vandal. I fear neither of them will come to a good end. The father does not seem to realize that I can bar him from this fort, and I might just do that. Good day, gentlemen." "Richard," Preacher said, after several trappers he knew had congratulated him on a good fight and the crowd had broken up. "Go on back to the church and charge your pistols and rifles. There's 3 bad ones heading this way. I believe I can stop them, but if I don't, it's going to be up to you." "Bum Kelly and his gang?" "Bum Kelly ain't got no gang no more. Not none to speak of, that is. The buzzards and the varmints is eating on most of his gang up south and east of Soda Peak. Richard swallowed hard.
You and your friends did them in?
That we did. Richard decided he really did not want to know the how of that statement.
The Indian renegade and his bunch?
Broke up and long gone. Richard looked around him to make sure they were alone.
Bum and his people were coming after the gold?
That they were. And the women. I don't think you'll have to worry with Bum no more. Just as soon as I deal with them three no-counts coming for your place, I'll look up with my friends and we'll chase Bum down and dispose of him.
He held out his hand and Richard shook it.
Likely as not you won't see no more of me, Richard, Preacher told the man. You tell Melody and the others goodbye for me.
He smiled.
You're a good man, Richard. I watched you grow over the weeks. You toughened up both in mind and body.
He clasped him on the shoulder with a hard hand.
You'll do to ride the river with, man. It was only after Preacher had ridden off that Richard realized he had just been paid the highest compliment a mountain man could offer.
Goodbye to you, friend, the missionary whispered to the afternoon. And may God bless and keep you and your friends as you ride the mountain passes.
Preacher didn't ride far that day. He rode north of the mission and picketed Hammer on Good and Gray's and a small pool of water and waited. Maybe he was wrong. Maybe the three survivors of the ambush were not going to attack the mission. Maybe they were just heading for the closest point of civilization. Maybe the thugs were coming here to steal, or beg, or buy supplies and horses and then leave. But Preacher doubted that. Although he'd never seen a tiger, he doubted one could change its stripes, and he felt the same about those who chose to ride the outlaw trail. Preacher knew that to a large degree, each man shaped his own destiny. People were not forced into a life of crime. They chose it willingly. Preacher had not one ounce of sympathy in his being for thugs and hoodlums and the like. Preacher also knew that what he was about to do, depending on whether the trio showed up, cut across the grain of those who knuckled down and cowered under the watchful eye of any constable or sheriff's department. Man steals your horse, you hang him. Man threatened to do a body harm, you go after that person and put the harm on him before he can do it to you. He waited in the timber behind the mission. Just after dark, he saw the three men slip to the edge of the timber and crouch down. He could hear the murmur of their voices but could not make out any of the words. He watched them point to the lamp-lighted windows of the church and living quarters. Preacher stood and moved silently, making a wide circle and coming up by the side of the buildings, then working his way to the rear of the main building. He crouched down, his war axe in his hand. He smelled the man before he saw him. The man stank of filth and days-old sweat. The hoodlum came closer, so close Preacher could have reached out and touched him. He was going to do just that, sort of, in a few seconds. The man peered in through the precious glass of a back window, into a darkened room. He saw the man take a long-bladed knife from a beaded sheath. Preacher rose like a wraith and buried the head of his axe into the man's skull. He rolled the man under the building.
What was that? Came the hoarse whisper. Stub my toe, Preacher gruffly called. You're a clumsy idiot, Waller. Did you find us a way in?
Right here.
You see them women?
Yes, they's naked.
Hot damn, I get first dibs.
What he got was the sharp head of a tomahawk right between the eyes.
Dipper? Came the whisper.
Right here. Waller with you?
Yeah.
I seen some fine-looking horses in the stable.
Good.
Did you say them fillies was naked?
Yep.
I'm on my way to glory, Dipper.
You sure is, Preacher said, as he lowered the cooling body to the earth. One by one, he dragged the bodies to a ditch far behind the church buildings and dumped them. He collapsed part of the bank over them and then threw small logs and branches over that. Sooner or later, the men might possibly be discovered, or an arm or leg of them would. But by that time, the bodies would be so badly decomposed, no one would be able to tell who or even what they had been. Preacher looked toward the rear of the buildings, 1,000 yards or more away. You good folks rest easy now, he said. Live a long life and be happy. Compliments of Preacher. Preacher rode away from the fort and made a cold camp. By noon of the next day, he was in the Cascades. By mid-afternoon, he had found the tracks of both his friends and Bum and his crud. By nightfall, he found the first small mound of stones left him by Nighthawk. To someone unfamiliar with his style of living, the stones would have been meaningless. To Preacher, they spoke volumes. He made his camp and slept as soundly as he ever did. 4 days later, he caught up with his friends. They were standing over 3 mounds of earth. They killed them whilst they slept, Beartooth said. I didn't know none of these boys, but they appeared to be trappers. I reckon they had them a jug and drank themselves silly for they went to bed. Their heads was all beat in. The rocks and clubs is over yonder all bloody. So Bum and Jack and them others now got guns and the like. These bodies was stripped naked, so them no goods now got skins on, I reckon. They taken everything so's they'll pass for trappers. How'd you do? I took care of them three that went to the west and whooped Wade's butt good over at the fort. I'd like to have seen that, Dupree said. What brought all that on? I don't know. I reckon he was just feeling lucky. You should have killed him, Trapper Jim said. I would have, but the chief factor butted in just at the last minute. Too bad, Beartooth said. Let's ride. Bum and his small party crossed over into Washington Territory, into what is now Idaho, and for the first time since the ambush began to feel like they just might have eluded their pursuers. They could not have been more wrong. None of them had even the faintest inkling of what manner of men rode after them. Bum and his men were thieves, murderers, cutthroats, and almost anything else that was evil and dishonest. Like so many others, they made the oftentimes fatal mistake of judging others by comparing them to self. While no one who is even an amateur student of the West would ever write, or even think, that mountain men were paragons of virtue, most of the mountain men did operate under a loose code of conduct. They were wild and woolly and, as the Western saying goes, born with the bark on. Yet curiously drawn to alliances and bonding with like kind. A good woman was as revered as their own mothers. So even to think of doing harm to a good woman was enough to bring their wrath down on a person. Bum and his bunch did not realize that Preacher and his friends, if it had to be, would pursue them all the way to New York City and drive them into the Atlantic Ocean. I believe we can rest easy now, boys, Jack Harris said. Preacher and them friends of his'n has played out their string. Yep, Leo said, stretching out on his stolen and blood-stained blankets and sucking on a cup of coffee. I think we can relax and start pondering on another job. Miles to the west, 5 hard-eyed mountain men rode their ponies, their hawking rifles across their saddle horns. I think we ought to lay low for a time, Bull said. Let the news of this wagon train getting through to the Blue Waters get back east. Then these people who come a-fogging to the promised land, they'll have cash money and fancy women and the like. Pickin' will be fine, boys, fine. I agree, Bull, Bum said. But we got to start looking hard for a cabin to winter in. The snow's done capping the low mountains. It'll be hard cold soon. We'll find some trapper's cabin and kill him, Leo said. Lay in a stock of meat and jerk it. Preacher and them silly friends of his'n will think we've done left the country.
I know a spot up on the Clark, Jack said. Snug little cabin that'd do just fine. Trapper lives there with one of the prettiest little Injun gals you ever seen. She could keep us all happy during the winter, and then we could kill her come springtime before we pulled out. We'll catch her man out running his traps and do him in quiet like.
Sounds good to me, Bum said. We'll head that way come the morning. Pretty little thing, you say, Jack.
Purty as a picture she is.
Shapely.
Preacher and the others stood over the ripped and torn body of the man.
Anybody know him? Preacher asked.
I think it's Parley, Jim said. But the buzzards and the varmints been hard at work here, kind of hard to tell.
Preacher rolled the man over on his stomach and grunted. A bullet hole in a dead man's flesh was obvious. Shot him in the back while he sat before his fire, Nighthawk observed.
Four men, Dupree called from outside the small clearing. It's Bum and them others for sure. Tracks are plain. He rejoined the group.
We're going to take him alive, boys.
Preacher spoke the words grimly. And we's going to have us a court of law all proper and legal-like. Then when we find him guilty, we'll hang him.
That sounds good, Jim said.
Nighthawk, you be the judge, Preacher said. I'll speak again the bunch. Dupree, you defend him.
Wah!
The Frenchman recoiled. I ain't got nothing good to say about this pack of mad dog Edens.
No, we gotta do this right and proper now, Preacher insisted. You just let them have they say and such as that. Then after they's done, if you can find anything good to say about them, say it. Hell, it don't make no difference. We gonna find them guilty anyways. Jim and Beartooth's gonna be the jury.
When the time comes, I shall don my proper robes to sit in judgment, Nighthawk said. I have a fine buffalo robe in my pack.
That'll be good, Preacher said. Make you look plumb respectable.
He glanced at the crow.
Providing you do something with them goddamn pigtails.
5. Day's nooning by a crick, Dupree reported back. So careless you'd think they was having a picnic.
The day was cold, the approaching winter already opening its hand and closing chilly fingers over the high country. The men had awakened to a hard freeze that morning. The night before, they knew they were close upon the outlaws and had elected to keep a cold camp, so the smell of wood smoke would not give them away.
They got a fire big enough to roast a bear, so's I reckon we could build us a small one for coffee.
Bum and them's got a plenty, Preacher said, and it's already fixed. No point in using up any of our supplies when come the sundown. Them down yonder ain't gonna have no further need of victuals.
You make a good point, Nighthawk said. Perhaps it is you who should be the judge.
You be better. You can look sterner than me.
Of course, you are correct. I also am much more handsome, and certainly I present a much more regal appearance.
Wah! Beartooth said. He's got you on that, Preacher.
English judges wear wigs, Jim said. I seen a drawing of them in a book one time. Then pigtails of hawks fit right in, seems to me.
You be right, Beartooth agreed. When do we move again, them murderers?
Right now, Preacher said and stood up. Leo decided the coffee was just about ready and dumped in cold water to settle the grounds. Suddenly he had the feeling of eyes on him. He looked around. He could see nothing.
What's the matter with you? Bull asked.
Leo shook his head.
Nothing. Just had a shivering sort of feeling, that's all.
That meat do smell good, Jack said. I'd be hungry for a fact.
Bum was all stretched out comfortable on his stolen blankets, half asleep.
He opened his eyes to the warbling of a songbird. Sure was pretty. He cut his eyes and saw something that was a lot less pretty. Beartooth, standing grinning at him from the bushes. The man had a Hawken rifle in his big hands, the muzzle pointed straight at Bum. Bum cut his eyes to Jack Harris. The man was squatting motionless, the muzzle of a pistol placed at the back of his head. Bum could see Leo staring up at Preacher, the mountain man holding him in check with a pistol. Bull was looking into the muzzle of a rifle held by Dupree.
"Well, now," Preacher said, "that meat do smell good. So let's eat it up, and then we'll settle down to business."
The outlaws were trussed up and dumped on the ground. They offered no resistance, and up to this point, no argument. Preacher and his friends ate the meat and drank the coffee. Bum and what remained of his band lay on the ground and watched in silence. Bum finally broke the silence.
"Go ahead and shoot us, you sons of bitches. What the hell are you waiting on?"
"Speak for yourself," Leo said. "I'd as soon delay the grave if possible." The three that made it to the fort and the missionary church, I took an out, Preacher informed the outlaws. They was a scabby bunch, they was.
"You recall their names?" Bum asked.
"Waller and Dipper was the only names I heard. Don't know who the other one was. Don't make no difference. He's just as dead as the others." "You never gonna get us to no court of law," Bull boasted. "And since you ain't lawmen, what you're doing is agin the law. You ain't got no right to hold us agin our will." "You're wrong on all counts," Dupree told him. "We fixin' to have us a court of law, right here." He pointed at Nighthawk. "And yonder sits the judge."
"A goddamn Injun,"
Leo hollered. "You best watch your mouth," Preacher told him. "It don't pay to make the judge mad." Nighthawk rose and went to his pack horse, taking out a buffalo robe and slipping it on. He sat down on the large rock and said, "Court's in session. Commence the proceedings."
"Who goes first?" Dupree asked.
"Me or you, Preacher?"
"Me."
Preacher wiped his mouth and rubbed his greasy hands on his buckskins. He looked at the trussed-up outlaws.
"I'm the persecutor."
"Prosecutor," Nighthawk corrected.
"That too," Preacher said. "Your Honor, these here men before you is scum. These murderers and rapers and torturers, they ain't fit human beings."
"Objection," Dupree said.
"Hell, I ain't even got going good yet," Preacher yelled.
"This is an outrage," Jack Harris hollered. "I demand a real lawyer and a real judge, not no goddamn Injun."
"Objection overruled," Nighthawk said. "Proceed, Preacher."
"Where was I?"
"Not fit human beings."
"Oh, yeah, right. Your Honor, these here four snakeheads is about as low as a human person can get. Buzzard puke is easier to look upon than these four."
"I object," Dupree hollered.
"Hell, I do too," Bull squalled.
"All of you be quiet," Nighthawk said. "What is your objection, Counselor?"
"Say what?"
"Counselor, that's what you are at this moment, a counselor. Now what is your objection?"
"I ain't really got one. Hell, I agree with everything Preacher said. But ain't I supposed to object every time he says something? I seen a trial back, 25 years ago, I reckon it was. Judge had him a wooden hammer and was beating on the table and hollering about half the time. And one or the other of them lawyers was always objecting about something."
"You are supposed to object when the prosecution brings up some point that you disagree with," Nighthawk told him.
"Oh, well, hell, I might as well lay down and take a nap if that's the case."
"No, you don't," Bum yelled. "I got to pee," Leo bellered.
"Order in the court," Nighthawk thundered. "Does the prosecution have anything else to say?"
"I say we hang the bastards," Preacher said.
"Yeah, me too,"
Dupree said.
"You can't say that," Nighthawk told him. "You're supposed to be defending these no good, sorry, good-for-nothings."
He caught himself.
Strike that from the record and the jury will disregard my comments. Jim nudged Beartooth.
That's us.
Why disregard it? Beartooth asked. It's all true.
What record? Jim asked.
Somebody's supposed to be writing all this down, Leo yelled.
Well, don't look at me, Jim protested. I can't write.
Stand the accused up before me, Nighthawk said. The four were jerked to their feet.
Jack yelled, This ain't no legal court of law. I demand a judge. I got rights.
I sentence the four of you to be hanged by the neck until you are dead, 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 dead. Nighthawk said, And may God have mercy on your souls.
Help! Bull bellered.
Get the ropes, Preacher said. I have to dismiss the court, Nighthawk told him.
Well, dismiss it, Preacher replied.
Let's get on with the hanging, Jim said.
Don't be in such a rush, Bum squalled.
I thought a court of law was supposed to show mercy and compassion, Jack asked.
We have the right to an appeal, Bull said.
Now, that is true, Nighthawk said.
How do we go about that? Dupree asked. This is getting right complicated.
I think the prisoner's got to go before another judge, Beartooth said.
We ain't got no other judge, Preacher said.
Jim looked at the four.
I reckon that means that you boys is out of luck.
Help!
Jack bellered.
Now what do we do? Dupree asked.
Hawk's got to dismiss the proceedings, Jim said. Soon as he does that, I'll go fetch the ropes.
I hate every damn one of you people, Bull yelled.
Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, Jack reminded the group.
But he ain't here, Preacher said. So we're acting in his place.
Court is adjourned, Nighthawk said, then frowned.
I think that's the correct term.
Help!
Leo hollered.
They funnin' with us, Jack said, sweat dripping off his face.
They ain't really gonna hang us.
That ain't no collar for a tie he's a-fixin' over yonder, Bull said.
Jim was tossing four ropes over a limb. The open nooses dangled and swayed ominously. The four outlaws were hoisted up into their saddles, rather, saddles they had killed the trappers for, and the nooses placed around their necks.
You boys want to pray?
Preacher asked, meeting their scared eyes and lingering for a moment at each man. His own eyes were hard as flint.
Swing wide the gates to heaven, Leo shrieked.
That'll be the day, Dupree muttered.
Lord, I'm a-coming home, Bull shouted.
No, you going in the other direction, Beartooth corrected.
Forgive me of all my sins, Jack Harris moaned. All the men and women and children I've killed and robbed and raped and done all them other bad things to.
Disgusting, Nighthawk said.
God damn you to the fiery pits of hell, Preacher, Bum Kelly said.
Odd thing for a man in your position to say, Preacher told him, then whapped the horse on the butt.
Bum Kelly and his bunch dangled and kicked and twisted and swung. The men waited until the outlaws had kicked their last, then lowered them down and dumped them in a shallow ravine, collapsing rocks over the bodies.
You want to say something over the tomb? Dupree asked the preacher.
Preacher thought about that.
Yeah, I do.
He took off his hat, and the others did the same. None of them not knowing quite what to expect from their friend. Preacher was famous for a lot of things, including his sometimes profane and always odd eulogies. Preacher took a breath and said, Here lies Jack and Leo and Bull and Bum. They run their race, and now it's done. They was sorry crap without no class. So bend over, Satan. And let 'em kiss your ass.
6. Theirs was a solitary breed, and a breed that regrettably did not last long in American history.
progress pushed them aside. But on this late fall day in the year of 1837, the four mountain men lingered long over coffee that morning. No one had put it into words, but all knew that here was where the trail forked. "Where are you going to winter, Jim?" Dupree asked. "I got me a little cabin over on the Flathead. It was right snug last time I seen it. I reckon it's still there. I'll soon know. You?" "I get on right good with the Nez Perce. They was a fine-looking squaw lost her man last time I was through there. I told her I'd be back for the snow flew. I reckon it's about time to head that way. Nighthawk?" "My grandfather is old. I will go to his lodge and we will talk of things past. He will die this winter, I am thinking. I want to see that he is buried properly. Bear?" "I'm going to look up Lobo and see if he's still living with them buffalo wolves. If he ain't, I might winter with him and let him put me to sleep each night listening to his damn lies. Preacher?" "I don't know." Preacher tossed out the dregs from his cup. "I got the restless flung on me. I might head south. Then again, I might head east. I just don't know." "You best be making up your mind, old hoss," Beartooth told him. "The snow's fixing to fly soon." "Yeah, I know it." He began rolling his blankets and gathering up his kit. Within minutes, the mountain men had packed up and were in the saddle. "I wish I could say all this has been fun," Preacher said, "but I'd be lying, and that's something I never do."
"Wah," Dupree said, "it'll be a relief not to have to smell your stinking feet."
"What will be greater relief," Nighthawk said, "is not having to listen to Beartooth's stomach grumble when he does not eat 8 times a day. "Or listen to Dupree try to sing those awful French songs," Jim said. The men smiled at each other for a moment, and then rode their separate ways without another word. That afternoon, Preacher topped a rise. Careful not to skyline himself to unfriendly eyes, he paused and looked westward, his thoughts of Melody. "Mayhaps I should have partook of them charms of Hearn Hammer. I might have the regrets about not doing that some cold winter's night. But I expect we'll be back that way for too long. I don't know why I say that. I just feel it." He settled his hat on his head and lifted the reins. "Well, good horse, you want to go see some country we ain't seen afore?" Hammer snorted and shook his head. "Well, let's us go then." And the mountain man called Preacher began another ride into the pages of history. This concludes The First Mountain Man by William W. Johnstone. Narrated by J. Rodney Turner. Copyright 1991 by William W. Johnstone. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation and was produced in the year 2019 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.